This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:43 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila, and we want to turn your attention now to something that is happening in Pahang. So essentially, there is a mining project that may cause detrimental environmental damage and damages beyond that, really, for the Orang Asli of Pos Lanai. And so essentially, there is an activist group, Misi Solidarity, and Party Socialist Malaysia planning to fundraise 30,000 ringgit in order to address this. And some of the things that they hope to achieve with that money would be to fund legal costs, data collection, mapping out of established native land, printing and postal services, travelling costs, and also fundamentally to file for an affidavit to stop land encroachments.
Yes, so this is basically to fight a declaration that will essentially compel the state government to gazette the Orang Asli's homes and the forest as native customary land. And this will, as you said, it will permanently put a stop to land encroachment of development of land that originally belonged to the Orang Asli community. This particular mining project is said to be the most destructive by far to have impacted their lands. It involves about 660 hectares of land, putting six Orang Asli villages at risk. And in addition to that, mining lanthanide from that region can actually cause the soil as well as the river to be contaminated. And this is particularly important because the Orang Asli community is dependent on natural resources when it comes to their survival and their livelihood. Up to 2,500 people, Semai people, will have their livelihoods affected by this.
Yes, and above and beyond livelihoods, right? I think that it's so important to center that, but it's also worth looking always when we talk about these matters about the ties to land, because this is before we even take into account the cultural history of the land, where Orang Asli have preserved death rituals, marriage practices, birthing beliefs, have fundamentally lived their lives for years, you know? And so I think that while we I don't want to fall into the trap, I guess, of looking at everything only through the lens of profit, because that is what companies do. And that is what in some ways has gotten us here to begin with. So, yes, we are talking about this situation in Pahang and also about the efforts to try and assist. So if you have any questions, any comments you'd like to share, you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we are crossing over now to Sivarajan Arumugam, who is the Secretary General at Party Socialist Malaysia. Siva, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, BFM, for having me.
So firstly, we covered this in brief, but maybe you could tell us a bit more about the mining project that was approved by the state government of Pahang.
Yes, actually, the community basically heard of it first when the Tok Batin, or the chieftain of the Pos Lanai Orang Asli community, received a letter from Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli. And so basically what JAKWA, or the Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli, did was that send them a letter informing them that JAKWA has given permission to a consultant company to visit Pos Lanai in view of doing a survey to look at the EIA effects or the environmental impact assessment effects if a lateral mining is to proceed there. Now, this was really very shocking to us because this particular community in Pos Lanai, they were actually just after, they were fighting a long battle to stop the Telom Dam, which also went through the same process of fighting and protesting and all that. And they have experience of such consultant researchers coming in, trying to convince them that such projects are development for them and they have to evict them and so on. So once they received such a letter last June in 2020, so they were really worried on what is going to happen. And furthermore, this was regarding a lanthanide mine that was proposed in their particular land, covering an area of about 660 hectares. So that's how we got this information. And obviously, even though JAKWA is not the authority to give out mining licenses, because mining licenses and land issues are under the purview of the state government. So obviously, what would have happened is that the state government would have requested JAKWA, because being an Orang Asli settlement, they have to get permission from JAKWA for any party or any consultant company to enter. So I think probably the state government is the one that would have initiated this, and JAKWA has sent this letter. And so that is how we learned that there was such a project in the pipeline in the Post Lanai area.
So it's been reported that this project will affect the livelihoods of about 2,500 people. But do we know how many Orang Asli live in this area, and how will their lives be affected?
Yes, you know that because they live in very interior part of the jungle. If you look at Post Lanai, it's actually right in the middle of the central spine. This is known as the Jelai Forest Reserve area, and it is a very eco-sensitive area. So we would estimate their populations because they're very interior. So sometimes very difficult to actually estimate the actual population. But we would think that the Semai tribe around that area would have been maybe about 2,000 to 3,000 people around that area. And naturally, the Orang Asli, they are the guardians of the forest. And they rely on the forest for mainly all of their livelihood in terms of water resources, in terms of getting the forest products, in terms of protection, getting river from the fishes. So most of their life will sort of circle around the forest. So any kind of work, any kind of mining work, any kind of logging concession or whatever which is happening, it really affects the ecosystems. It's not a case where that you can do logging in one certain area, which is not really their settlement area, and expect that they will be safeguarded. It's not like that. Because even until today, the Telom River, which runs through their village, has been badly contaminated, because the Telom River, actually, it runs through from Cameron Highlands. And the effects of decades of uncontrolled commercial farming has resulted in a bad contamination of the Telom River. And they have seen over the years how the fish stock has been reduced. So this will affect them. And there's only one or two more smaller rivers which they still rely on to get their water resource and so on. So this mining is really a bad news for them, where they are really afraid that it will further deteriorate their living conditions.
So how have the Orang Asli tried to make their voice heard? What avenues have been explored, and how has the state government reacted so far?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, see, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, this particular community were in the forefront when they were fighting against the construction of the Telom Dam. So that's why they have a bit of a bad experience on dealing with the state government, because during the time, this was back in 2013, 2014, that is when the state government, and ironically, the state assemblyman for Jelai, which is covering their particular village, is the Menteri Besar, the current Menteri Besar, which is YB Wan Rosti. So at that time in 2014, Wan Rosti, he was supporting the Telom Dam construction. He wanted to evict all of these Orang Asli from that place. And so they have a very bad experience of the state government not responding to their calls, not hearing to their comments and their grouses. And that matter had to be taken up into court. So the Orang Asli, in fact, in order to stop the Telom Dam, they had to pull the Tenaga Nasional Berhad, which were the builders of the dam, and the state government to court. And it was a very prolonged battle in court. And finally, back in 2018, if not mistaken, that's when the Pakatan government came into power. And through the negotiation with the Pakatan government, then the project was finally shelved. So they do have a very bad experience dealing with the state government, which just failed to listen to their concerns, understand their livelihood, and just thought that they could be uprooted from their forest and put them into a new resettlement areas, and it will be a life as usual. But that is not the case. So in that fact is that now they already have this experience now, and that is why they are going all out now to make sure that all measures are taken before any more further encroachment happens in their forests and in their homes.
Now, PSM and Missi Solidarity have actually started a crowdfunding exercise for this cause. Could you walk us through that? Could you walk us through these efforts and what the funds will be used for?
Yes. So basically, we have targeted about 30,000 ringgit. This all is not used all at once, because like I said, this court battles, it could take a very long time, maybe 3 years, 4 years. Of course, the first approach is to file this matter at the High Court in Kuantan, in Pahang State. And of course, if we don't make it at the High Court, then we need to file in an appeal, take it up to the higher courts. So it could be a very prolonged battle. But we like to take this opportunity to thank our lawyers who have agreed to do this matter pro bono. But basically, like I said, since it's a long process, long haul process, so there's a lot of cost involved in getting the documentation correct. Because as you know, that for us to claim this native customary land, we have to do all the work. No one else is going to help us. We have to do our own mapping by using GPS and make sure the maps are correct, make sure where our ancestral land, the boundaries are, how big is it. And also there's a lot of documentation on oral history to actually show, to get a history from the elders on actually how long they've been living there. And these are all very important points that we have to submit to the courts. So I think most of the costs will be involved in documentation, getting the maps out. And the other cost, of course, is that because most of our councils are coming from KL. So for them, the traveling costs. And as you can see that since we have to file this matter in Kuantan, and that is clearly very far away from where these Orang Asli are residing now, which is in, like I said earlier, the Ulu Jelai Forest. So for them to travel up and down. So we're estimating through this whole court battle that we will need these funds, about 30,000 ringgit. And the response has been quite promising. We thank everyone who has contributed to this cause. And we hope that we will be able to achieve this target so we can immediately start the court process.
So if we take a step back, when it comes to mining or developing land,
yes,
has there been any progress when it comes to considering the welfare of the Orang Asli?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, I think for the past couple of years, most of these developments have been happening without really hearing out or really getting their consent of the Orang Asli. See, what is happening here, we can very see is that most of the state governments, unfortunately, where the Orang Asli settlements are, the state has clearly, they have failed in their fiduciary duty to gazette these lands. Because the duty to gazette the lands, even though the state has full knowledge that the Orang Asli have settled down there, the Jakwa has full knowledge, and they've lived there for hundreds of years, the duty to gazette the land lies on the state government. But deliberately, what the state government has done is that it has always postponed this duty for the interest of giving the flexibility to alienate this land to other private entities for profits, obviously. It could be for logging, it could be for musanking purposes, it could be for mining. So I think the state has deliberately postponed and failed to look at this process. So what has happened now is that, we have to do this thing in court. And so basically the other thing also, like I said, is that in terms of development, whereby we also find that what is happening now, if you look at there's clear conventions on this, like if you look at the United Nations Declarations on Rights of Indigenous People, it clearly states that any kind of projects or any kind of development, proposed development on ancestral land has to be upon free, prior and informed consent. But we see that most of these things are not done. People are not informed of actually what is going to happen, how it's going to affect their lives. And it's a very sad state that even recently, I think about two weeks ago, that we found that how the Semalai people in Bera Pahang, they lost their court matter when the court sort of granted the decision giving full authority to the private company, an agricultural company, to take away their land, to evict them, and to start planting oil palm. So this just happened about 2 weeks ago for the Semalai Orang Asli people in Bera Pahang. So it has been very disappointing on how the state has been responding to the calls of the Orang Asli. And so that's why we really have to make sure that we have to fight out in the court battle. We have to gather our information and evidence, and it's going to be a hard battle to fight because it's basically the people against the profits. And so that is, we are fighting an uphill task.
So in that sense, I was wondering how you feel, how confident are you about winning this case in court?
Well, winning this case is one thing, but what I think is that especially the post-Lanai community, they in terms of documentation, I think we have quite a number of documentation. Basically, because you see, post-Lanai was actually a site where there was a jungle fort. You remember during the communist era, the British actually set up many jungle forts in a lot of jungles in Malaya. So this particular jungle fort is known as Fort Dixon. So thanks to the British, there are quite a number of photos and some documentation talking about how the Semai people also living around the Fort Dixon, and they have photos of them, how they helped to build the fort and so on. So there's some kind of documentation to show that how these people have been living there as a community since the pre-independence era. So this kind of evidence is quite helpful to us, we are gathering. So I think our fighting chance is basically, it's on both grounds. One is on the legal battle, where we have to gather as much evidence as we can to make our case in court. The other battle is, of course, on the ground itself. While this legal battle is taking place, I think the post-Lanai people, after experiencing the fight against the Telom Dam, if there's any encroachment which is going to happen, I think the people are ready to put up blockades. They're ready to go down to make police reports and then to make the fight and to really take the fight to the ground. Because I think we have, the people there have left no other choices. As we have seen the fight of the Orang Asli people in Gua Musang, how they have bravely stood up and put up blockades. So I think this is the battle that we have to take. And we have seen similar situations on the Penan tribe in Sarawak and so on. So it's going to be a long battle. But I think in the coming year, in the last few years, the public has been more sympathetic to this because of the fight that the people have put up. And we believe that there will be public support for such a cause.
Siva, thank you so much for joining us this evening. That was Sivarajan Arumugam, Secretary General at Parti Socialist Malaysia. Just to say that if you would like to contribute to the fund, please go to simplygiving.com and search for Post Lanai, and the page will pop up and you can contribute there. In the meantime, we do have to head to the 7 o'clock news. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.